It's time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense wins championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Here are your hosts, Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on 95.3 WBCK. It is Saturday morning. It is 10 a.m. That means it's time for Mitten Madness. And yes, I am Dejon Hughes, also known as DJ. I'm making the intro again because Jacob is on his way home as I'm recording this. So he'll be back next week, but we're going to dive into all of the importance. We're going to talk about Michigan over Bama and how huge of a win that was. We're going to talk about the Lions coming out with a tough victory out in San Francisco and what that means for this upcoming week and their matchup with the Vikings. And we're going to dive back onto the hardwood, which has been good to us in Michigan so far. Normally, Jacob would ask me how I'm doing. I just got back from Chicago for the new year. Happy New Year to all of you. We're excited to bring 2025 to you all and get more into all of the fun that is Michigan sports. We're going to have picks later on in the show. Jacob got me the picks. He got me the notes for this weekend as well. And that means we are also going to let you know what's happening this weekend. Now it's time for us to get into the fun stuff. This week, the fun is going to be Lions-Vikings. We're talking about the Lions first, but before we get to that, we're going to talk about what they did this past weekend. They went out and played the San Francisco 49ers. They came out with a 40-34 gutsy win out in the West Coast. They're 14-2 on the year now. They're 8-0 on the road. The 49ers, well, tough year for them. Already eliminated from playoff contention. 6-10, 4-5 at home. Obviously dealt with a ton of injuries, but they sure made it worth the Lions' while this weekend. I mean, a 7-6 after the first quarter, and at halftime, San Francisco was leading 21-13. And then the Lions stormed back a little bit in that third quarter. They put up 18 points in that third quarter, getting them up to 31. The score is 31-28 at the end of three, and then the Lions were able to get nine more on the board in the last frame, while San Francisco only put up six, leaving them at a six-point deficit, and that's how the Lions came out with a win. Some notable stats. I mean, Jared Goff, 26-34, 303 yards, three TDs, compared to Brock Purdy, who didn't really have too bad of a day outside of two interceptions. He was 27-35, 377, and three TDs as well. Jahmyr Gibbs on the ground, 18 for 117, and a TD as the leading carrier. Garendo did end up playing for the 49ers. He only had 34 carries on nine, or 34 yards on nine carries. And he's got Jameson Williams taking the top off the defense multiple times. And let me tell you, diving into Jameson Williams is one of the best parts about the Detroit Lions. He stretches out any defense that you're going to go against. He's an automatic deep threat that can catch the ball, but he's also got speed that you can use in the end around. You can use in the short game, in the intermediate drag routes, in the slants. He is effective all over the field, and we are seeing it week in and week out. He has really burst out and has been what he was at Alabama. He's been what he was in college, a reliable receiver that's going to give you a big play almost every game and is ready to dominate whoever is on the other side of the turf. He has looked so good the last couple of weeks. Last weekend was just another example of that. On Monday night, he went for five for receptions, 77 yards and a TD, compared to Ricky Pearsall, who had eight receptions for 141 yards and a TD. But I mean, Jameson Williams has truly been a star point of this offense, obviously alongside Sonic and Knuckles, who have done an amazing job. Obviously, no Knuckles, so just Sonic last night, and boy, did he do his thing. I mean, total team stats, 475 in yards in comparison to 433. That was in favor of San Francisco. Two turnovers for San Francisco, none for the Lions. So doing their job and taking care of the ball and making sure that they are going to be the ones with the ball in their hands, allowing to put points up on the board, not giving points in the other direction. And then 29 first downs for the 49ers in comparison to the Lions, 23. The Lions did have the ball for almost 35 minutes of this game compared to 25 minutes and 8 seconds for the 49ers. 71,000, almost 72,000 people in attendance for it. But there was a point in this game where the Lions were in very deep trouble. It looks like just before halftime, the 49ers were at 70% chance, a 78% chance for the 49ers to win at one point in this game. Even had a 61%, a 73% chance at one point in the third quarter as well. But the Lions did prevail. And just a moment, we're going to get over into this week, which is going to be against the Minnesota Vikings for not only the NFC North title, but the number one seed in the NFC, and I believe the second best record in the entire NFL behind the Chiefs, which all of you know, I believe the NFL is cheating for the Chiefs. I don't like it. I think the Lions are one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFL, and they're proving it again as they win tough games over and over. They're going to be going to take on the Minnesota Vikings this weekend on Sunday Night Football, which will be on WBCK, so you can tune in here to listen to that game as well. The 14-2 Vikings, which are 6-1 on the road, are coming into town. They're going to be at Ford Field, taking on the 14-2 Lions, 6-2 at the crib. Jared Goff, I mean, has been exceptional this year. He does have 10 interceptions, but he's got 36 TDs. Over 4,000, almost 4,400 yards. He's got 4,398, and he's done great. Obviously, Jahmyr Gibbs now leading the rushing room at 1,273 yards and 13 TDs on the year. Amon-Ra St. Brown has been a saving grace for this team as he has 109 receptions for 1,186 yards and 12 touchdowns. On the other side, Sam Darnold is somebody who should be in the MVP conversation, somebody who is not being talked enough there, and someone who has literally willed his team to victory week in and week out. Without Sam Darnold, the Vikings are not 14-2. I don't care how you want to look at it. I don't care what kind of rivalry you want to be. I'm a Packers fan, and I'm telling you this Vikings team is good, and it's all, well, not all, but a big part of it is due to Sam Darnold and his play. 343 for 504 on passes and completions for 4,153 yards, 35 TDs, 12 interceptions. He's got Aaron Jones in the backfield, my former Packer, helping him out, who is questionable coming into this game, for 245 carries, 1,093 yards, and 5 TDs. And Justin Jefferson goes for 100 receptions, 1,479 yards, and 10 TDs. The ESPN analytics matchup predictors giving the Lions a 64.5% chance to win this game, while just giving the Vikings a 35.2% chance. There is a small chance that this game ends in a tie, but let me tell you, I don't think either one of these teams will allow this game to end in a tie. Someone's going to make a gutsy call to try and win the game, and it either work in their favor or it won't. I think we all know kind of where I'm throwing that at. And hey, I'm all for it because it works out for them most of the time, and life is about gambles. That's what sports is about, is actually making the play out on the field, and the Lions have done very well at doing that. Like I said before, Aaron Jones questionable for this game. Obviously, no Alex Anzalone, no Khalif Raymond, no Aiden Hutchinson, as they're all on the IR. Christian Mahogany, Emmanuel Mosley are questionable for this game. David Montgomery's also going to be out as well. The Lions are 4-1 in their last five. The Vikings, they're 5-0. I mean, they're coming off a 30-12 beating, shellacking of the Bears. Obviously, they beat my Packers last week by 2, which was a very rough game to watch. They beat Seattle by 3 on the road, which is always a tough place to play in. Lumen Field, absolutely wild. 12th man does its job consistently. The Falcons, they swapped around 42-21, and then they had a really weird, uncharacteristic 1-point 23-22 victory over Arizona. The Lions in that last five, I mean, 40-34 last week over the 49ers. You got the Bears that they beat, doubled up 34-17. Lost to the Buffalo Bills by 6, 48-42. But we all know how miraculous that game was and how close it was to being a Lions victory. 34-31 victory over my Packers, and the Bears 23-20 on what was Thanksgiving Day. This is going to be 8:20 p.m. kickoff. It's going to be obviously on NBC, Peacock, going to be here on WBCK as well. I'm leaning on the side of the Lions. They opened up at 3-point favorites. It remains at 3 points. The line opened up for 51.5 for the over-under. It has now jumped up to 56.5 heading into the game. The Lions are negative 150 on that money line. Those Vikings plus 130. The Lions have a huge opportunity in front of their hands. They have not won the division since last year. But I mean, I don't think they've won back-to-backs in quite a while. So it definitely is an opportunity for them to do that. A chance for them, or no, excuse me, they didn't win in the division last year. Oh, they won the division, but not the total NFC. So that's something that they haven't done in a long, long time. They have a chance to lock up the number one seed in the NFC conference, which is going to make sure that every team that they play in the playoffs has to come to Ford Field. The route runs through Ford Field. They're very comfortable playing at home. I mean, yes, their two losses this year are at home, which is weird, which some people would say, well, maybe they should throw this game so they can play all their playoff games on the road. But who wants to play a playoff game on the road? Let's be honest here. You don't want the travel, the hotel, all of that, the fans. You want your fans. You want to be at home. You want to have your normal routine. That's what the Lions are going for this weekend, and they have a chance to grab that. I think they do it. We'll pick that later on in the show. But for now, we're going to get ready to take a little bit of break. But when we get back, we're going to be diving into basketball. We're going to be basketball second segment, Pistons, Michigan, Michigan State, letting you know what's happening on the hardwood. We'll be back with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Welcome back into Mid-Madness on 95.3 WBCK. We are going to get on to the hardwood here in this second segment before we talk about Michigan and Bama in our next segment, because I'm going to do a whole lot of bragging for about 9 minutes. All right. The hardwood has been good to us here in Michigan. We'll start with that professional team that plays over in Little Caesars Arena. They wear red, white, and blue. Yes, I'm talking about those Detroit Pistons. They are 15-18, just under 500, has them fourth in the Central. They're just a game or just half game behind Indiana. They're 14 games behind Cleveland, who has been on a roll to start the year. They're 29-4. They're one of the best teams in the NBA at the moment. The last time we talked, the Pistons were coming off a 114-113 victory over the Kings. And they were looking to see what they could do over the next couple of games. They did end up losing by 13 points to the Nuggets, which is a very tough loss to have, because let me tell you, the Nuggets have not played good basketball this year. They have been on the struggle bus this year. You don't want to be one of the teams that's allowing the Nuggets to get comfortable and get wins and feel good about themselves against, because they need a whole lot of help right now, and you are providing that by allowing them to win a game. I honestly think the Pistons are better than what we're seeing from the Nuggets, but it just wasn't their night. And I mean, they gave it a fight. 121-134, there just wasn't enough defense played really by either squad, but more importantly by the Pistons. But all of that is overcome when you go out and you beat a team like Orlando 105-96, who has looked very good with Jalen Suggs, Paolo Banchero, Franz Wagner, and company. They are playing good basketball down there. They come out with a 9-point victory, the Pistons do, and that game was at Little Caesars Arena, which the Pistons have played pretty well at home. If we look out throughout this season, they have a win at home against Atlanta, then a loss against Houston, a win against Miami, and then a loss against Chicago, and then a win against Toronto. They have two losses against the 76ers and the Bucks. So we're looking at 3-3 so far. And then you got a win against Miami and a loss against Utah. So 4-4. And then you got the win against Orlando, 5-4 so far at home. And they have another home game coming up last night as you're listening to this. Don't quite have the result of that, obviously, as we record on Fridays, as you know. So they will be playing Charlotte. A good chance for them to be 6-4 so far at home, which has boded well for them. 15-18, they're already above that win total that they had last year of 14. Me and Jacob said we wanted to see them get to 28 and at least double what they had last year. They're definitely on pace to do so. Just, what is that, 33 games into the season. They have 15 wins. We could talk about them having more than 28 wins soon. So I really like what we're seeing out of the Pistons. I mean, the young crew, Cade Cunningham, averaging almost a double-double at 23.8 points a game, 9.7 assists per game for Cade Cunningham. Obviously, want to send prayers and thoughts out to Jay Nivey. Sorry that I didn't open up the segment that way. It completely slipped my mind. Obviously, he left the game against the Magic in a very scary way on a stretcher. Leg injury was absolutely devastating, very serious. Asura Thompson and several other teammates were in tears, and I imagine that many of the fans there were having some kind of feeling about it as well. His knee was kind of rolled up on, and it bent at a very awkward angle, one that I would not like to see again, one that I hope is not painting a horrible picture in your mind as I talk about it now. But I do want to send T's and P's, thoughts and prayers, love and quick and speedy recovery Jaden Ivey's way, as he does have to have had surgery for a broken fibula. That came in 10 hours ago from Sharns Charnia. So surgery has happened. He is probably going to be out for the year with that broken leg. And, you know, we hope to see him back in the gym soon as he rehabs and then is prepared to come back next year and be an absolute star as he was. He was leading the team in field goal percentage at 46% on the year. But, I mean, the team stats are looking great as well. They're pulling down just about 45 rebounds per game at 44.7, just about 26 assists per game at 25.8, and they're putting up 112 points per game. They still have Simone Fontecchio out as well. Simone Fontecchio. It will be really great for him to come back. Fontecchio will be a great stretch four that would only be able to help out. Ron Holland has been absolutely spectacular for the Detroit Pistons as he has come into this game off of the bench. He provides absolute speed, defense. He has jump ability unseen in this world, and he just brings energy onto the floor that is very helpful for the Detroit Pistons and has really made them into what is a star-studded team alongside Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren. Tobias Harris has also stepped up and filled that role of number one scorer in what has been a pretty positive life. Now let's talk about the Michigan State Spartans. We're talking about them over on the basketball court because their football season is over, just like the Michigan Wolverines, which we'll touch on in just a moment because it ended a little bit better than the Spartans did. But the basketball court has been gracious to the Michigan State Spartans. East Lansing has been rocking, as it always is when it comes to the Breslin Center and what that basketball team has to offer, especially men's and women's. They're continuing to do their job up there. They're known for a basketball school, and they're making it happen. Last time we talked, they had just came off a victory against Nebraska. I mean, 89-52, there was no question in that game. And let me tell you, there's no question in their next couple of games either. They came back, they beat Oakland in Battle of the D in Detroit, 77-58. No question there either. And then they beat FAU 86-69, ran away with that one at the end of the game. And then they took care of Western 80-62, which I said they could be coming in on a six-game win streak going into Ohio State. Might as well book it at seven, as that game was last night as we're recording this Friday. Don't have the result. 8 p.m. on Fox. I'll probably watch that maybe. Okay. Enough of that. Then they have Washington after, and then Northwestern before playing Penn State, and then Illinois, which will be their first ranked competition. But that's all the way on January 19th. So it looks like they could be on a 10-game win streak before playing Illinois. Michigan State is a team to watch in the Big Ten. Michigan State is going to be a dangerous team in the NCAA tournament. Every team that has to suit up their sneakers, put on a jersey, and step on the hardwood against Michigan State is going to be in for a ride. Tom Izzo knows how to coach. Tom Izzo can out-coach any coach on any sideline. As long as his players listen, they're bound to win any game. And they're showing it. Their talent is exceeding abundantly, led by Jaden Akins. And then you have Cohen Carr, who has been great. And then you have Jeremy Fears Jr. as well, pitching in. Jaden Akins, he's got 13.7 points per game in just 26 minutes. He's shooting a 45.3% clip on the year. And then you got Jeremy Fears putting in another 7.4 points per game while dishing out 6 assists per game and just having 2 turnovers, taking care of the ball while helping his teammates eat. I mean, that's a great point guard if you ask me. And then you got your partner in crime right next to you at guard, pouring in points left and right, shooting at a high clip. And I'm sure that his turnover percentage is low because, you know, Tom Izzo ain't about the turnover game. You turn the ball over too much, you're sitting on the bench with me. So I have no worries in how good his team is going to be. I mean, 82 points per game for the Michigan State Spartans at 59th for the country, 42 rebounds per game, got them tied for 13th in the country, assist 18.2 per game for 16th in the country, and they're only allowing 67.1 points per game. Michigan State doing it well on the hardwood like expected. Now we're switching gears over to the Michigan Wolverines. On the hardwood, we'll talk about them over on the gridiron in just a moment. Last time we talked, they came off a 1-point loss to Oklahoma, ranked Oklahoma, which is going to go down as a quad one loss. It's going to be a very good loss for them in a game that they shouldn't have lost because they lost it on a 4-point play, something that made me absolutely furious. But we talked about that enough. This time, they're coming off 2 huge victories. They take care of Purdue Fort Wayne, no question, 89-58. And then they welcomed Western Kentucky into the Chrysler Center as well. They took care of them 112-64. Their next matchup, a blockbuster matchup. It's going to be later today, 8 p.m. on Fox. They're going to be taking on USC at USC. And then they got the UCLA trip against number 15 at UCLA coming up on the 7th. 10 p.m. for that game. No network provided on ESPN at the moment, so can't tell you where that game is going to be played. They take on Washington after that, and then Minnesota. Both of those games going to be played on Big Ten Network or Fox Sports. Either one, they're both the same network. And then they take on Northwestern. So an opportunity for Michigan to also get on a grind here as they just picked up 2 victories. Maybe they beat USC if they're able to carry that momentum into UCLA and come out with a win. I see 3 very winnable games in Washington, Minnesota, and Northwestern before taking on another ranked opponent in Purdue. So Michigan, obviously led by Vlad Goldin with 13.9 points per game. He's also coming in at a 68.3% clip on the year. Trey Donaldson's got 3.8 assists per game, but he's adding another 12.3 points per game at just 2.2 turnovers. And we know Danny Wolf is a huge part of this team as well. We don't even have to mention his stats to know that he's a big leader on this team there. 84 points per game, which has them 35th in the country. 39.8 rebounds per game, tied for 44th in the country. They have 17.5 assists per game, which is 35th, and they're only allowing 66.6 points per game, which is a scary number, but could mean good luck as well. The Michigan Wolverines will be a scary team in the Big Ten as well. They will be a scary team in the tournament. They are one of 3 teams left undefeated in conference play as they are 2-0 alongside UCLA and Michigan State. They are both 11-2. Maryland, Penn State, Nebraska, all 11-2. Oregon is 12-1. 10-3 for Michigan, Iowa, Northwestern, and Indiana, along with Wisconsin. And that's who's leading the Big Ten at the moment. When we get back, we're going to talk Michigan and Bama in that ReliaQuest Bowl game and how it turned out for us as Michigan Wolverine fans. We got more Mid Madness for you on 95.3 WBCK.
Detroit sports fans, Wolverines and Spartans alike, this is your sports show, Mitten Madness, with Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes on 95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK. This has been the segment I have been waiting on this entire show. Yes, I've been doing the show solo because Jacob is on his way home from Alabama after spending the holidays with his family. Speaking of Alabama, Speaking of Michigan, Michigan beat Alabama again. Yes, I did say I picked Alabama in our picks last week. I should have stuck with my original pick of Michigan. But hey, I also told all of you that I would be rooting for Michigan to do the funniest thing ever. And Michigan did the funniest thing ever. I am so happy. The year of 2024 is the year of Michigan over Bama. It happened. Michigan owned Bama in 2024. You saw from the very beginning of this game, it was going to be a rough game for both sides. Let's be honest here. It started off with three turnovers for Bama. Two fumbles and a pick. Michigan scored points off those, but they were two field goals and a touchdown. If all three of those were touchdowns, Michigan probably wins this game handily, but they definitely gave Bama opportunities to stay in this game. Their first three are, you know, Zavada from 45, Zavada from 30, then a Frederick Moore 13-yard touchdown pass from Davis Warren, one of the best passes I've seen Davis Warren throw. I mean, they were having a ball out there. Michigan looked like they came to play and prove that they still are a premier program in this country, that these incoming recruits and the new transfer portal guys are coming into a good program that's ready to compete for a national championship again this year, because that's definitely how they looked when they played Bama on Wednesday night. They took care of, or excuse me, Wednesday afternoon. They took care of business down in Tampa at Raymond James Stadium, where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play, where some of these guys will be playing football because they'll be playing on Sundays. We know that. But, you know, Mondays and Thursdays and every other day of the week now, because the NFL does what it wants. Michigan jumped out to a huge 16-0 lead in the first quarter. There was another Zavada 21-yard field goal with 2:04 left in the quarter. Then Bama came storming back. Robbie Outs caught a 25-yard touchdown pass from Jalen Milroe on quickness down the field. Graham Nicholson also had a 24-yard field goal with 4 seconds left heading into halftime. And then the third quarter was a bunch of boringness. Let's be honest here. It was boring back and forth. Neither team had anything going. They could not get anything moving. They couldn't move the needle on either side. The pill could not find the end zone if they wanted it to. So we saw a scoreless third quarter. Yes, a scoreless third quarter. So that means heading into the fourth quarter, the score was still 16-10. And that's when Michigan pushed out the lead just far enough. They put together a 9-play, 47-yard drive for 5 minutes and 17 seconds for Zavada to kick a 37-yard field goal. And then Michigan's defense came into play multiple times throughout this game. The next important drive for Bama was an 8-play, 42-yard drive that took just 2 minutes and 43 seconds off the clock, but ended in a Graham Nicholson 51-yard field goal, cutting the lead to just 6-19-13. Michigan gets the ball back. They turn it over. We kind of saw that coming. We didn't think that they were going to move the needle very far without Davis Warren when he got hurt in this game. And it proved that Alex Orji kind of has a lot to work on this offseason if he's going to try and win that job from Bryce Underwood, which I don't think he even has a chance. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. We're talking about what happened on Wednesday. He was able to do just enough. They were picking up some key first downs. Jordan Marshall and Benjamin Hall are some dogs. Them boys are some dogs. They went to work on the ground. Jordan Marshall chugged away and chugged away. Broke away for a couple decent-sized runs. Got some key first downs throughout the game. And Benjamin Hall was like a wrecking ball. He just hit the hole hard every single time, jamming through whatever little space was there and creating it for himself, because he wanted them to know, we're playing Michigan-style football. Bruise, bully ball, we're going to run between the tackles, tough nose, you're going to have to stop me or I'm just going to run through your face. Run through an MF'er's face. We've heard it here before multiple times, and that's what you saw Benjamin Hall do. I'm excited for the running back room next year. You mean to tell me those two guys are going to be aside Justice Haynes? Yes, please. And you know we're going to get a decent offensive line. We got Bryce Underwood coming in. You have wide receivers wanting to flock in. The defense is going to remain good, as we saw, because they stepped up and made Jalen Milroe's day awful. They made Jalen Milroe's day awful. Now let's get back to that last drive of the game. Bama comes in. They got a chance. They think they're going to be able to get. They get down right outside the red zone. That's when Michigan's defense really turns it up. Wink Martindale did a fantastic job in this game. What a masterpiece of a coaching job. did Wink Martindale do in this game? He was able to dial up pressure at the perfect times, especially at the end of the game. The D-line worked like crazy up front. They were absolute Mustangs among horses. And what turned out to be the deciding factor was that pass rush, getting to Milroe over and over, flushing him out of the pocket, making it tough for him to make throws, forcing him to throw on the run. And then he was not able to stand tall at the end of the game. Couple passes toward the end zone, could not connect to his target. The last one fell harmlessly to the ground. Michigan kneeled it out a couple times, and they owned Bama in 2024. Michigan owned Bama in 2024. Tell me that's not the best thing we've heard all year. Yes. Michigan beat Bama twice on the first day of the year and the last day of the year in the Rose Bowl, stopping Alabama on fourth and goal with Jalen Milroe in overtime to seal the game and send them to the national championship in one of the best Rose Bowls we have ever seen and one of the best football games we have ever seen. We knew we were watching destiny happen right in front of us. We knew Michigan was destined to be the national champions after that game, and it proved to be true with what happened after. And then, fast forward, both teams have a struggling year. Both teams, uncharacteristic years with first-year head coaches. Both teams struggling with new players at new positions, with transfer portal and everything going on in those scenarios. Both teams end up seeing each other again in a bowl game. This time it's on the last day of the year, December 31st of 2024. Bama, far and away favorites. 17-point favorites in this game. Bama was a 17-point favorite in this game on some betting books. 17 points. And they couldn't stop Michigan if they wanted to. Michigan owned this game. Michigan dominated this game. They played this game the way they wanted to. And the defense stood tall the entire game. The secondary was draped all over receivers. I mean, they made Ryan Williams have a tough day as well. He's had a very tough, rough half, second half of the year. But it does not mean that he's not going to be spectacular. Do not forget that young man is just 17 years old. He's going to be playing on Sundays, and he's going to be playing very well moving forward. But Michigan was able to bottle him up, and they bottled up a lot of the other receivers as well that you see on the Bama side of things. Bernard only went for 4 receptions and 80 yards. No tutties for him. No tutties on the ground for Scott. Jalen Milroe had the one passing touchdown. He also had an interception. Davis Warren went 9 for 12 for 73 yards and a touchdown. But Bama had a chance to win this game early, even with Michigan up 3-0. And then once Michigan went up by 13, because even when they were up 10, Michigan wasn't, or up 6, Michigan wasn't having the chance to. 62.4% with Alabama having a chance to win this game, Michigan up 6-0. And then as soon as they scored that touchdown and went up 13, it shot up to 63.6% chance for Michigan to win this game. And it never went back to Alabama's way. They gave them a little bit of a cushion at halftime. They gave them 50.5% chance to win the game when it was 16-10. But then as the third quarter went on, it just got worse for Alabama. And then Michigan kicked that field goal and it went up to 88.5, which is the highest that it got to before it got all the way to 100% at the end of the game. 190 total yards for Michigan is all it took. They only had one turnover, 13 first downs in comparison to 15 first downs for Bama, 3 turnovers for Bama and 260 yards. Michigan had the ball for 38 minutes and 12 seconds in comparison to Bama, 21 minutes and 48 seconds, just under 52,000 people in attendance for this game. Michigan owns Bama in 2024. We'll be back after the break with our picks, the first ones of the 2025 year on 95.3 WBCK.
95.3 WBCK.
Welcome back to Mid-Madness here on 95.3 WBCK. I'm Dejon Hughes, getting things wrapped up for me and Jacob here on this segment. He'll be back next week, so things will be back to normal. Y'all know our last segment of the week is always our picks segment. Last week, we both had a very rough week. I went 3-5. He went 2-6. That has us standing. Jacob is 60-52 on this season. So far, I am 64-48. 8. We are going to jump into the picks this week. We got another 8 games lined up, as we had a fantastic time doing 8 games last week. Why not do another 8 this week? We're going to start on the hardwood this time. The college hardwood is where we are going. Number 6, Florida, taking on number 10, Kentucky. Their first conference matchup of the year for both sides. There is no spread or no over under for this game, but Kentucky came in as 1.5-point favorites. They're 11-2 on the year as the 10th best team in the country. Florida coming in 13-0 as the sixth best team in the country. Florida 5-0 in their last 5. Kentucky 4-1, 85-65 loss. I mean, absolute shellacking by the Buckeyes from Kentucky, or by hands of the Buckeyes for Kentucky. So they're 11-2. They did have a 90-89 overtime win over Gonzaga. Great wins so far for Florida. 90-84 over UNC, 83-66 over Arizona State, 87-69 over Virginia. And then they got a couple blowout wins over Northern Florida and Stetson right under their belt. Only a 38.3% chance being given to Florida in this game in comparison to 61.8% for Kentucky. Owe leading the way for Kentucky, 15.9 points per game on 50.7% shooting, 80% at the free throw line. Clayton Jr. leading the way for Florida, 17 points per game, 46.7 from the field goal percentage, and a 90.9% at the free throw line. Jacob's going to go with Kentucky. I am going to roll with Florida. I like trends, and so far the trend this year for Florida is that they're playing good ball and they are filling the net up, and that has allowed them to win this game. Is at Rupp Arena, so that will give some leeway to Kentucky here, but that'll be at 11 a.m., so that's going to be on as soon as we are done, and you'll find out if Florida is going to get things popping or not. Kentucky is a negative 120 favorite, while Florida is even on the books. But that's the first game of the week. Next game is going to be number 23, Arkansas, taking on number 1 team in the country, Tennessee. Arkansas 11-2 on the year. Tennessee 13-0. This is both of their first SEC games as well. Thurow leading the way for Arkansas, 17.8 points per game, 62.1% from the field goal percentage, 70.1% from the free throw line. Lanier leading the way for Tennessee, 19.6 points per game, 45% from the field, 75% from the free throw line. Last 5 for both is undefeated. Arkansas 75-60, UTSA 89-87 over Michigan, 82-57 over Clark, 95-67 over North Carolina A&T, and 92-62 over Oakland, while Tennessee 75-62 over Miami, 66-64 over Illinois, 84-36 over Western West Carolina, 82-64 over Middle Tennessee State, and 67-52 over Norfolk State. 1 p.m. later today is this game tipping off. 88% going to Tennessee, 12% going to Arkansas. And based on what I'm seeing in front of me, Tennessee has been filling the bucket this year. They're athletic, they're long, they're doing great defensively. They're only giving up 56.2% or 56.2 points per game in comparison to their 80.1, but Arkansas is putting up 82.5 points per game while giving up 65.5. They are both averaging about 5.5 blocks. Arkansas at 5.7, 8.5 steals as well. 13-game win streak for Tennessee, 6-game win streak for Arkansas. Someone's win streak is coming to an end. We both think it's Arkansas, and Tennessee is going to be the one that wins. Both me and Jacob rocking with Tennessee for this game. Next game of the week is Baylor and Iowa State. Iowa State number three in the country. Baylor number 25. They're 9-3. They're 1-0 in the conference. Iowa State 11-1. They're 1-0 in their conference as well. O'Meara leading the way with 16.1 points per game for Baylor. Gilbert leading the way for Iowa State at 16.3 points per game. Iowa State averaging 87.7 points per game in comparison to Baylor's 86.4. Baylor giving up 68.5, while Iowa State giving up 65.8. Baylor 4-1 in their last 5. Iowa State 5-0. This game going down at Hilton Coliseum in Ames, Iowa. I'm going to go with Iowa State, and so is Jacob. I mean, 1-0 in the conference, only one loss. You're number three in the country. You've been doing things right. I don't think that's going to stop. And they got a good basketball energy going on, as the Iowa State women's team is good as well. And Audrey Crooks has been absolutely balling for those Cyclones. So I think the boys get some of that magic, as they have a 67.4% chance to win in comparison to 32.6% for Baylor. Jacob is in agreement. Moving on to our next game of the week. It is going to be Oklahoma, number 12 in the country, 13-0 for their first SEC game of the year. They're taking on Alabama, who's number 5 in the country at 11-2. Marcus Sears leading the way for Alabama at 18 points per game. Fears leading the way for Oklahoma, just a freshman at 18.1 points per game. Last five for Oklahoma, they're all dubs. Last five for Alabama, they're all dubs. Bama's on a five-game win streak, while Oklahoma is on the 13-game win streak. This game is going to be at Coleman Coliseum in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, meaning Alabama's the home team. They're averaging 89.9 points per game, giving up 77.2. So the defense has to come from somewhere. While Oklahoma's putting in 83.1 points per game, giving up just 67.5. They only have a 16.5% chance to win, while Bama's got 83.5. Me and Jacob are in agreement here as well. We are both rolling with Bama. The three-point shooting for Bama plus the defense normally helps them out here. Their defense, as they do have 6.4 steals on the year. Another win streak is coming to a close, but we think Bama's the one that's going to remain winning, giving them six in a row and ending Oklahoma's win streak, giving them their first loss of the year. All right, that's enough talk inside, enough talk on the hardwood. We're going outside. We're hitting the gridiron, the grass, the turf. We're talking some football. We're going to go college football first. We've got the semifinals coming up, the college football playoff semifinal at the Goodyear Cotton Bowl Classic. Number 8, Ohio State, 12-2 on the year, taking on Texas, 13-2, number 5, 7:30 p.m. on Friday, January 10th. Ohio State opened up as 5-point favorites. They're now 6-point favorites. The line opened up at 54.5 for the over-under. It now sits at 53.5. Ohio State negative 225 on that money line. Texas sitting at plus 190. Will Howard, I mean, he's thrown almost 3,500 yards. Quinn Ewers, almost 3,200. Wisner, over 1,000 yards on the ground. Henderson, 925. Jeremiah Smith, 1224 in the yardage, 14 tutties. Golden's got 936 yards, 9 tutties. Ohio State's got that one blemish in their last five games to Michigan. Texas has that one blemish in their last five games to Georgia. They both have tough losses earlier in the year. This game going down in Arlington, Texas at the AT&T Stadium. Jacob's going to rock with the SEC because you know that's what he does. He's going to take Texas, and I am begrudgingly going to take Ohio State. But after the way they have played in their last couple of games, there's no way I'm picking against the Buckeyes. I'm going to go with Ohio State, hoping that they pull this one out, as they have a 49.2% chance to win, while Texas has a 50.8% chance to win. Next game on the docket, number 7, Notre Dame, number 6, Penn State. This is like the worst possible college football playoff that could have happened for me as a Michigan fan. This is disgusting. Like, I really hope, like, kind of deep down, I want Texas to win, but I know that probably ain't going to happen. 13-1 Notre Dame taking on 13-2 Penn State on Thursday, January 9th, 7:30 p.m. Notre Dame opened up at 1.5-point favorites. They remain 1.5-point favorites. The line opened up 45.5 for the over-under. Sits at 46.5. Notre Dame, negative 125 on that money line. Penn State, just plus 105. Drew Aller, almost 3,200 yards. Riley Leonard, almost 2,300 yards. Jeremiah Love, 1,057 yards, 16 tutties. Katron Allen, 1,026 yards, 8 tutties. Tyler Warren, 1,158 yards, 8 tutties. Collins, 455 yards, 2 tutties. Leading receiver. Notre Dame, unblemished in their last five. Penn State, 45-37, Big Ten championship loss to Oregon. It seemed to have worked in their favor, as they are still playing and Oregon is not. Hard Rock Stadium down in Miami Gardens, Florida is where this game will be going down. And in surprise, surprise, me and Jacob in agreeance again. We do think Notre Dame's going to come out this time. They're going to beat Penn State. They're going to move on to the national championship game against what I think is Ohio State, what he thinks is Texas. Either game will be a blockbuster matchup, and we're going to be in for it. But we both got Notre Dame coming out of this one. Now moving on to the pro ranks, Jacobs Steelers taking on the Bengals. 10-6 are the Steelers, 5-2 at home. 8 p.m. on the 4th later today. That's also going to be on WBCK. Bengals 5-3 on the road. They're 8-8. Bengals opened up at 2.5-point favorites. They remain 2.5-point favorites. The Steelers sitting at 2.5-point underdogs. They're plus 110 on the money line. They do have a 53.2% chance to win this game, according to the analytics. Jacob and myself both rocking with the Steelers, because why wouldn't we? This one's pretty cut. The Bengals have had a tough year. The Steelers are going to make the playoffs. This will solidify that for sure. Maybe help them in the seeding, maybe not. But we do think that they are going to win this game. Our last game of the week, probably the most important game to you all. It's the Lions. It's the Vikings going down on Sunday, 8:20 p.m. It's going to be here on WBCK along with NBC and Peacock. The Lions, 14-2. 6-2 at home. Vikings, 14-2, 6-1 on the road. They both have losses on the road. Well, Vikings, a loss on the road. Lions, a loss at home. This one's going to be a really tough game. The Lions have a 64.5% chance. We went through all of this earlier, so you know. I'm going with the Lions, and so are Jacob. So the rundown, we both got the Steelers. Both have Tennessee. Both have Iowa State and Bama and Notre Dame and the Lions. I've got Ohio State. He's got Texas. I've got Florida. He's got Kentucky. And coming up this weekend, as you heard, we're going to have both of those Saturday NFL games, which involve the Steelers and the Bengals. And I believe the Chiefs are playing in that other game. I'm going to get that for you right now. But we also have the Lions game coming up on Sunday, so you will be able to listen to that on right here on WBCK. That other Saturday game is going to be the Browns and Ravens, 4:30 p.m., 8 p.m. coming up for Bengals and Steelers. That's it. That's all we got for Mid Madness. Things are going to be back to normal next week. I am Dejon Hughes for Jacob Harrison. This has been Mid Madness on 95.3 WBCK.
Join Jacob Harrison and Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.